Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course. That's the name football, of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got in my definition, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you rant about this podcast too. Just a side where Jeremy analyzes some matches and kiss the grin the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you? You listen to this podcast too. And you love this podcast too.
Welcome back. Well, I guess we'll welcome you back if you made it here. If you made it this far, we applaud you, because week four, I need a trombone sound or something, man.
Just call it CSI Mountain West.
Jeez. I guess we could go that route. Yeah, that's this week, not very good. Jeremy Moss here made it. Matt Kennerly there. He's also back after going through a swoon of emotions, is probably a nice way to put it.
That would be a nice way to put it, yes.
A swoon after he was at the Fresno State-Tulsa game. We'll get to all that stuff. And where should we start? Should we start with the whole as the total, or just kind of jump into the games? Or what should we do here? Because we don't prepare before the show, really.
Well, I mean, I think we can start just by saying, you know, we have an article about this up on the website. Just not a lot of wins on the on the board this week. You know, Boise State had a pretty nice win on the road against a Pac-12 team, and you know, conference play, somebody had to win. And other than that, it was just kind of like one disappointment after another. But you know, I think what I would say is, you know, there's a lot of people out there. We made a joke on Twitter that, you know, the Mountain West just kind of sucks right now. I think it's more accurate to say that we're just kind of seeing that many of the teams in the Mountain West have certain kind of killer flaws that is holding them back. So we can, and I think as we go along through the games, we'll be able to touch upon those and people will kind of get the sense of what we mean.
I think so, because most of it was blown leads. Like, they went 2-7, and even Boise State's win, their first half was amazing, second half left a lot to be desired. And we'll get to that win over Oregon State. But the league, if you look at it, like, Fresno should have won. Wyoming should have won. Nevada had a very good chance to win their game. It could have seriously been like 5-4 or 5-3 or whatever and been fine. But it's been an okay week. Like, oh, the Rams hung around Minnesota, good for them. San Jose had a bad game, backup QB, whatever, that happens. And then then we'd kind of just joke about UNLV Idaho and have at it. But everything apparently went the opposite way that we thought it should have happened, or everything went wrong, essentially. I think that's a nice way of putting it.
Yeah, I think I would agree with that.
Let's just get to the games. Our website, because we skipped over that, mwcconnection.com. Thanks for everyone who's actually listening. We see who you are. We see the numbers, not who you actually are, but we have an uptick, so we appreciate that. Hopefully make you laugh. We make you say, those two guys are just a bunch of dummies, but let's get going. Friday night, one of the many games that conference should have won. Wyoming at Eastern Michigan. Did you know Eastern Michigan is now 3-1, Matt?
I did know they were 2-1 going into Friday night. They hadn't really beaten anybody of note to say anything. But I think we know that Wyoming is going to be at least a decent team. So, I mean, for the Eagles, this is kind of a nice win for them. And for Wyoming, you know, I think they're going to look back at this one in a lot of ways and say that they kind of left something on the field.
Yeah, I watched more than I normally do of Wyoming early, because Friday night or early evening, I'm like, okay, I watched at work. I watched when I got home. I'm like, okay, I got time to watch this. You have 4 turnovers, 2 pick sixes, and you don't win this game.
Yeah.
Should have had a third pick six, had former running back turned linebacker DJ May could have caught a ball. At very minimum, he had open field in front of him. He may have tripped, but it still would have been turnover deep in Eastern Michigan territory. That was in late second half. But they picked off the quarterback, Eastern Michigan's Porter there. T. Porter, I forget his first name. But they actually switched the backup. But if you have a pair of pick sixes, Todd Porter there, excuse me, you should win this game easily. And 4 turnovers. Yes, they're plus one, but also college kickers are the worst.
Well, I mean, it's not only that, you know, it's they put pressure on the quarterback pretty much all night long. You know, Kevin Prosser, Connor Kane had a couple of sacks for the Cowboys, and they had 6 tackles for loss as a team. You know, they hit the quarterback actually quite a bit. You know, if you look at the box score, they had 6 quarterback hits that were counted, and like you said, the 4 interceptions. But you know, on offense, they just really weren't as efficient with their chances as they could have been.
Well, Brian Hill got stuffed.
Yeah. And, you know, as you know, Josh Allen is probably going to be good, but I don't think that he's a good enough quarterback at this point to really kind of carry the team. So, you know, while his numbers might look fine, you know, he was 19 of 21, 234 yards, the 1 interception. You know, this is a team that wants to be balanced. They want to be able to move the chains both running and throwing. And when you kind of put matters into his own hands like that, I don't know that they're good enough to really, you know, pick up. I don't know that Allen in particular is good enough to really pick up that slack.
He's not, but it wasn't necessarily his fault for part of the game. Yeah, he played okay, but Tanner Gentry had 2 fumbles in this game as well. He was by far the best player for Wyoming, 12 for 127, but he fumbled the ball twice around midfield. Eastern Michigan capitalized on that. I think they scored some points off of that, but he fumbled twice. And it was just things happened in the second half because it was the game was never like, not saying, well, I mean, you should have won with the turnovers you had, but even with what was going on, it was still a close game. It's not like they were winning 30-0 or 21-0. This was still a close game. It was tied at the half, 17-17. But when you have untimely turnovers by Gentry fumble, you have a blocked field goal from like extra point range, I think it was what, 24-yard field goal, and that would have gave him the lead they needed to possibly win. Things happen, and it's hard to explain. It's a weird game when you 7 turnovers, you have 2 for touchdowns on your side, but there's Gentry fumbles are a big deal. Noticing Brian Hill, like he had 82 yards, 22 carries, that's okay, and a touchdown. Not for him, that's not good, but for any typical running back, that's okay. But he only had a long of 8. It's like, I don't want to compare him like when you've ever watched Barry Sanders play years ago, he would have a 50-yard run, then 3 plays could be minus 8. It seemed like Brian Hill, he didn't even have the explosive part. He was getting hit line of scrimmage. There was no blocking. Eastern Michigan was getting a push. He was going 1 yard, 2 yard, minus 3 yards, 4 yards. He wasn't getting anything done at all. And that's a problem. He's a guy that he'll get his yards like he did, like going 3 to 5 at a time. He averaged 4 yards a carry, which is okay. But he's a guy that will break off a 25-yard run, a 30-yard run, even a couple 10-yarders. He had none of that. And that's an issue, too.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at how the field position broke down, too, especially in the first half, Wyoming just didn't take advantage of the advantage that they held. You know, on average, they started from the 33-yard line in the first half. But, you know, they were, you know, when it came to extending drives, you know, they were only 2 of 7 on third down in the first half. And then when that story flipped in the second half, you know, they were starting at their own 22 on average, and they were even worse on third down. They were only 1 of 6. So, you know, they held, you know, maybe the advantage passing the ball, but, you know, Eastern Michigan, to their credit, was a little bit better extending drives. You know, they held an advantage, especially in the second half, you know, in time of possession. Mm-hmm. And that's really kind of all it came down to, is that Wyoming just wasn't good enough to extend drives. Eastern Michigan was a little bit better.
Not much.
And they even ran the ball all over the Cowboys. You know, they averaged over 5 yards a carry, and they had almost 250 yards rushing as a team. So, you know, even though Porter and Brogan Roback weren't terribly efficient throwing the football, like, they were just kind of able to keep Wyoming at arm's length.
Yeah, the total yard thing for Wyoming having fewer yards is not that big a deal when you have two pick sixes and those multiple turnovers. But like I said, they couldn't extend drives. 3 of 13 for Wyoming on third down. Eastern was only 6 of 16. And it's just that type of stuff. When they needed a drive, they couldn't get it.
Yeah, so I mean, this is kind of a disappointment, especially, you know, we're both really looking forward to starting to make bowling puns.
I know, man. Come on. And they lost. And Eastern Michigan, like, I know they've only won one game last year, so it's not like they've been great. They've been pretty bad for a while. They seem to somewhat turn the corner, but, like, here's, like, the end of the game. Like, if you look at the last quarter, like, Eastern Michigan had their own pick six as well to make it 24-20. Oh, no, excuse me, sorry. The box score fooled me, excuse me, sorry. That was Logan Wilson's pick six, 27 yards. After that, it was Wyoming's up 24-20 late in the game. Eastern Michigan punts, three and out. Great. Wyoming's going to have a great chance to pull ahead. Pick six, three and out. They punt on their own. Well, they get lucky. Eastern Michigan punts again. Wyoming punts again on their own, three and out. Then the last little bit of the game, the very end, they give up the touchdown and then their own interception. And that was basically the game when they lose 27-24. And then the last pass, like the very end of the game, they had a shot because Josh Allen could chuck the ball far down the field. So this actually had the guy open. I don't know if he would have outraced the Eastern Michigan guy. And how deep were they? Let me see. I think it was about a 50-yard throw. They were sitting at the 27-yard line. So they still had a ways to go. It wasn't, obviously, they have, 63 yards to go. Allen makes a time. There's some pressure on him, which may have been the issue. Throws it downfield. I should know what receiver it was. Let's see. It was Tanner Gentry. I forget who it was, but they just chucked it downfield. It wasn't Gentry, sorry. But they had a guy right there, like the play before the end of the game. It's like you have a guy, underthrows it. And so it's like he had a guy beat. I don't know if he'd outrun whoever was behind him, but if he had it two more yards in the air, they had him in stride. I don't know. Maybe outrace the guy, get a touchdown to end the game. But
maybe. I mean, it woulda, coulda, shoulda.
Yeah, that was the I forget what. Maybe it wasn't the last play. I forget. Maybe it was the first in play at the 20, but still, because I guess the end of the game was a fumble or something after a pass. But that must have been. It must have been the first and 10 play at the 20. But late in the game, goes deep, underthrows. Like it was a far throw, so you can't blame Allen. But a little bit more, maybe could have had it. But they fall to 2-2. Which what does this say about Northern Illinois? Did you hear about their loss over the weekend?
I did. I saw they lost to Western Illinois.
Yeah, they're 0-4 on the year, correct?
They're 0-4 now.
Wyoming, San Diego State, Western Illinois, and whoever they played last time.
South Florida.
It's a pretty good team. They hung with Florida State for a while. All right, let's get to the let's keep going with the sad games, as pretty much all of them are.
Yeah. Okay.
Hey, we're gonna have fun and make fun of everybody, so don't be too upset about us, folks, okay?
Yeah, I mean, we are biased against every team.
So. Every team. And you went 2-7 this week, Lee. Come on. And one of those had to happen. All right, Purdue and Nevada.
Nevada.
Yes, oh, Nevada. Where do you want to start with this?
Oh, man, where do I want to start with this? I mean, I watched most of this game. Where are the big plays on this team, man? You know, Tyler Stewart, if you look at his completion percentage, it was, you know, 22 of 29, two touchdowns, 178 yards. But, you know, with that kind of efficiency, you would hope that they'd be able to find a few more plays down the field. His longest play was only 18 yards.
Yeah.
Against this defense, like, how is that going to be your most explosive play?
And James Butler, the rushing game was held to basically nothing as well, 68 total yards.
Yeah, that was most of the problem too. Like I think in weeks past, you could see how they wanted to use Tyler Stewart as a running threat as well.
Nope.
And you know he had a couple of nice runs, but like you know, he was sacked 5 times, which I think kind of depresses his overall output as well. But yeah, and that's another thing. How do you give up 5 sacks to Purdue? You know what I mean?
I don't know. It's
And how do you give up, you know, 166 yards on the ground, you know?
The part of the reason they lost this game, there's a couple, like, yes, there was another chip shot missed late in the game, which would have given them a 3-point lead. Or no, excuse me, tie the game at 17 apiece. Purdue goes on and scores their own touchdown after that to seal the win. But if you can't run the ball, they had a 14-3 lead. Not that that's huge, but it's not like, it's not like Purdue's just offense will just gash you through the air and on the ground, even though they sort of did. In this game, they're not known for – Drew Brees wasn't playing this game. There's not a quarterback that's just going to go downfield. But when they complete over 300 yards passing against a defense that's pretty good, like secondary, they have some players out there for Nevada, but when they give up 300 yards to David Blau in the air, 21-30, then also the running back, they give up 124 yards, where's the defense? You got to have some sort of defense. And we mentioned this in the offseason, the rush defense would be an issue.
Yeah, I mean, I think the secondary really just kind of let them down. Like, you know, I knew they were going to be tested against a team that's obviously going to lead with the pass. You know, but give credit to David Blau. He found a couple of big plays in this game. Those same plays that we're asking, you know, Tyler Stewart to make. You know, he was the guy that still found Bilal Powell for 48 yards for a touchdown, and he found Bryson Hopkins for 51 yards and a touchdown. So, you know, you got to give him a little bit of credit for that. And
well, I do, but I'm just saying, like, those are going to happen, but you have two.
But, I mean, you're absolutely right.
I don't know.
When you have a lead, you have to be able to kind of put them away with the running game. And so we talked in the preview podcast about James Butler potentially having a big game.
Whoops.
And that's what really makes his 38 yards on 14 carries really disappointing.
Yeah, they moved, like, I was looking at this a bit further, like, deeper stuff here. Like, third down conversion, Purdue was an amazing 11 of 15. And Nevada wasn't bad. 9 of 15 is pretty good. If you get over 50% or even 45%, it's pretty good on third down rate. So they still had success, but it's just not enough success, I guess, offensively. You could tell they did it. They only had 250 yards compared to over 460 for Purdue. But it's just had they been able to run the ball more, take some time off the clock, not that you're running to win the game, but if you have a lead, you don't need to pass as much if your passing game's not going well. Why stick with it as much as they did? I don't care if you're getting 5 yards a time or 3 yards a play or whatever yardage you're getting. They just gotta run the ball, drain some clock, and maybe things could have been a little bit different had they been able to get an extra first down here and there.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of that has to do with the interior of the offensive line. You know, Nathan Goltry, Echeverria, and McCollage maybe didn't have a very good game because, you know, the two guys in the middle of the Purdue defensive line, Eddie Wilson and Evan Panful, had 3.5 sacks combined and 5.5 tackles for loss overall. And, you know, for a team that wants to be able to control the clock, you know, for a team that maybe doesn't have explosiveness but can lean on a little bit of efficiency more than most teams in the conference, you know, they're going to have to fix that going forward because it's not going to get any easier for them from here against some of these other tough defensive lines that they'll be up against.
Would you like to know the stat of the game, essentially, I think?
I would love to know the stat of the game.
Well, not stat, but maybe the portion. I guess it's a stat. So Purdue has a 9-play drive that goes 46 yards. All the way to the Nevada 3-yard line. They're about to score. It's sitting there 17-14. Purdue's going to win the game, most likely. Wolfpack force a fumble. Recover the fumble. Let's see how far. It was Damian Baber, recovered a fumble. Return it a good amount of yards. So it went to the 37. So Nevada has the ball at throwing 37. They're dead. Big turn of events in the game. They're down by 3 points. Nevada's next possession. 3 plays minus 7 yards. Punt.
That's not going to get it done.
And they did force Purdue next time to miss a long field goal or go for a fourth down of their own. But still, it's like, you know, that turn of events, you got to go down and get something out of it. Even go a 10-play drive. If you don't score, you don't score. But to turn it over that quickly, put your defense back on the field again, who just was on an extended 9-play drive. The next drive was 10 plays. Defense held again on 4th and 9. Offense goes down, and then that's when that missed field goal comes out from, what, 22 yards or something?
Mm-hmm.
And also, really quick, one more thing, too, that for the field goal, minus 5 yards on 3rd and goal. So that doesn't help you.
Yeah, I got nothing else to say.
There's nothing else to say. They had chances to win. Defense stepped up when they needed to, and they couldn't handle it. Next game. Oh, boy. Iowa State has won their first game of the year. Congratulations.
Oh, San Jose State.
44-10, losers.
It's not a good game.
No, Kenny Potter, who we all thought was going to play this game, even though he had a leg injury versus Utah, after I think it was a sackitis because of that, how many times he got hit. They go with the freshman. Nah, I'm going up a road game, freshman quarterback. Was it John Love, I believe it's his name? The guy, J. Love, whatever.
It's not Josh Love.
Josh Love, sorry. I don't know everybody's name. I apologize. You should know that by now. How about this? Can the box scores put full names? Is that too much to ask?
This box score is full name.
What box score are you looking at? Am I on the wrong website?
I got this one off of Spartans.com.
Maybe I should do that instead.
Anyway. What?
Yeah, four interceptions in the loss.
Well, not only that, but, you know, Iowa State sacked him 4 times. Overall, the Cyclones ended up with 10 tackles for loss. And, yeah, this is another instance where they really didn't find big plays down the field. He just wasn't terribly efficient. He was less than 50% passing, you know, had only one touchdown, and... You know, give credit to the running game. You know, it was nice of them to show up once in a while.
Keep it going.
Zamore Ziegler and Deontay Cooper combined for like 180 yards rushing, which is pretty nice. But, you know, when you can't throw the ball, against a team like Iowa State, where you probably should be able to throw the ball, it's just not going to end well. And it didn't.
I guess it's also time to stop saying the San Jose secondary is pretty good. Give up 5 passing touchdowns, no interceptions. Backup quarterback went 5 of 8 for 136 yards and 2 touchdowns.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if I want to go that far because, I mean, Andre Chauchard still did have 3 pass breakups, so at least that's something that he can hang his hat on.
So you're saying it could have been worse.
It could have been worse. Yeah. Maybe that's kind of small consolation. It was just really kind of a bad performance overall. You know, and especially if you look at, again, field position in this game. In the first half especially, Iowa State was starting their average drive at the 46-yard line. And San Jose State was starting at the 26-yard line.
That can't happen.
So, yeah, and I mean, they didn't really have to convert that many third downs either. They were only 1 of 3 in the first half on third down, but that's because they were kind of moving the chains really efficiently. And... they were just able to take advantage of short fields in a way that San Jose State really had to kind of work their way down the field, and they weren't able to do it.
All right, let's move away from the game because it's a blowout, and who cares? They lost. It sucks. Let's move on to this topic within the game. Ron Carragher is kind of in the same boat as Tim Drudder, in my opinion. He had
apparently.
I know a lot of San Jose State fans want him out, but if also you look a bit deeper, like, he was only good when he had David Fells at quarterback, and only one of those years was actually good. When they won 10 games, and then was that the same year they beat Fresno, or is that a different year? That's the year after.
Sadly, that was the same year they beat Fresno. It was 2013.
Yeah, so they had one good year, and they're losing like they used to lose. Is there a chance that Carragher could be out reasonably soon?
I mean, I can understand, I think, where San Jose State fans are coming from, because especially when the results haven't really yet caught up to the recruiting that they've been able to do in the past couple of years. You know, obviously, you know, they've had some attrition as far as that's concerned, and there were some guys that they brought in who have already left campus.
Yeah, the best recruit ever, receiver, got busted for what, assault or something, his first semester last year.
Yeah. So I think that, you know, they have some pieces in place. You know, some of the guys they brought in, like Frank Kinda, I think is a keeper. I still really like the secondary. You know, guys like Maurice McKnight, who are getting more experience in the system, I think are pieces to build around. Honestly, I think that he's more in a situation where he should be able to kind of wait and see how things play out in conference play before fans make too rash of a decision and, you know, call for his head.
Do you know what his best season was as a head coach?
I do not. Not off the top of my head.
His first year, I guess last year maybe, but he went 6-6 his first year, 6-7 last year, and they went to the Cure Bowl. Where they won.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they won to get to 6-7. He's 16-25 overall, 11-13 in conference play, and this is in the West Division. That isn't very good. I know they lose Tyler Irvin. He's doing pretty good with the Texans, but he's probably signed a 5-year deal. I don't know what he has to do to keep his job. I don't think they're going to get rid of him now, but mid-season, unless something really goes bad in a couple weeks. But he's not safe by any means to continue on to next year.
I mean, I think that if you kind of look at the big picture, you know, you can see that they have some like promising pieces in place. Like, you know, Potter, you know, he's a senior, so he's not going to be back next year. But if you look at his composite numbers on the whole, he's been, you know, okay at a bare minimum, right? He's completing 60% of his passes. He has a 5-2 touchdown interception ratio. That's fine. You know, the running game has been a little bit inconsistent, but showed signs of life on Saturday. So I think that, you know, that's something else they can hang their hat on. I think most of what it comes down to, most of what his job security is going to come down to, is whether this defense improves. Because as of right now, you know, he's giving up, you know, his defense is giving up almost 40 points a game. And, you know, in this division, like if you're giving up 40 points a game, you're probably going to get fired. So I would wait and I would want to wait and see what happens, because, like I said, I think that there's pieces in place. I think Christian Tago is back to 100%. His return will make a huge difference. But yeah, obviously, until we get into conference play and they start playing some of these opponents like San Diego State and Nevada and stuff like that, it's going to be tough to say how good that defense is.
So I'm asking this really quick. We'll run through this. Also, losing Tyler Winston preseason wasn't helping either. But tell me who they're better than the rest of the way really quick. They play, just a yes or no, at New Mexico. Are they better?
Maybe.
Hawaii.
Yes.
Nevada.
Maybe.
San Diego State.
No.
UNLV.
Yeah.
Ooh, okay. A surprise. Boise. No.
Yeah.
Air Force. No. Fresno.
No. Yes.
So they're better than maybe four teams? So you might see them winning 5 games the rest of the way? Total, I mean?
I think that's where I had them to begin with. I think maybe I had them at 6-6. But again, I think it's more, you know, it's like some of these other teams in the conference. I think it's about being competitive rather than just being blown out week after week.
Okay.
So we'll see what happens.
Not to brag, but my 4-8 is looking pretty good.
Well, I mean, the other thing to keep in mind, too, you know, especially, you know, we talk about this a lot with UNLV, but I'll just mention it very briefly. You know, they're two leading receivers right now, Trey Hartley and Justin Holmes. They're both sophomores. So they're both probably learning on the job a little bit, being thrust into starting roles like that. But, I mean, between them, you know, they're at, you know, Hartley's averaging almost 20 yards a catch, and Justin Holmes is averaging almost 22 yards a catch. So at a minimum, they might have some big play potential on offense that, you know, once Potter gets healthy, if the line can keep him upright, they may be onto something there.
All right, I need to mark this because we need to actually make it more natural. We're going to take a quick timeout, so stay through the 60 seconds, or hey, you download it, fast forward. All right, next game. That was smooth, I tell you. Colorado State versus Minnesota. One of the games where, hey, we got it right. Rams covered this 6-2 over 2 touchdown spread.
Yeah, I mean, this was the game I watched most of before the Fresno State game. And I mean, I think it was a pretty interesting game to me, because to me, I think this was another instance where the defense played really well. you know, the numbers may not bear it out, but I think that, you know, Kevin Davis had a really good game. He had 9 tackles, including 1 for a loss. You know, Josh Watson had 12 tackles, had a couple tackles for a loss. So, this was more of a bend, don't break kind of performance. And even though they kind of got punched in the mouth early, I think they really kind of buckled down and played pretty well overall.
I got a question really quick. Before we get to anything, okay. Go farther. Do you know where Colin Hill's helmet is?
Oof. Yeah, that hit. That was not good. But, I mean, give him credit. You know, he hung in there, and I think that was kind of emblematic of his afternoon, to be quite honest. Like, his efficiency wasn't really there. I mean, he was only 50%, 182 yards, 1 touchdown, 1 pick. You know, but he was sacked 3 times. But I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that he really kind of hung in there more often than not, and he was trying to get, you know, plays down the field. So I'll give him credit for that. It's just I think that his lack of efficiency really kind of hurt them in this game, especially when the running game overall I think played pretty well. You know, Izzy Matthews, Marvin McKenzie, Faten Bauta. Well, actually, Faten Bauta came in on package plays every so often, but. I mean, between the three of them, they were averaging over 5 yards a carry. And, you know, so they were moving the ball pretty well on the ground. They just weren't able to find enough in the passing game to really balance that out.
Hey, don't forget the fake punt pass play.
That's also true. I did not expect that. But, I mean, that's really kind of gutsy. They're really going for it on the road against a pretty good Minnesota team. So at least now we know that Hayden Hunt can throw too, right?
Just in case, if we want to go to 4 quarterbacks this year.
Nice.
just saying. So not that they will, but we have the 4th player now to throw a pass. So let me ask you this. I didn't watch all this game, but what was Marvin Kinley's? What was that minus? Oh, never mind. I have a scratch that. I'll move on. never mind. I was asking a very dumb question, which could be par for the course, but... So since you watched most of this game, like, so what was the – is it just mainly being more – I guess I saw a little bit, not enough, like more efficient passing, one more dominant rusher? Is that probably all they needed? A guy to get maybe 80 yards instead of spreading it out amongst everybody?
I mean, I think it was kind of like what I talked about a little bit in the preview, where there's a big difference between Northern Colorado and Minnesota.
Of course there is.
Because – yeah, because, you know, not only that they sacked him 3 times, but – you know, I wish I had a clean number in front of me, but, you know, one guy in the middle of the defensive line, Richardson, Minnesota, of course, they don't have his first name.
Of course
he
not.
Had 4 tackles for loss. And, you know, their other defensive lineman, or one of their linebackers, had 3 tackles for loss. That was 2 guys. I think as a team, they had 11 or 12 tackles for loss, which really, I think, kind of hampered the running game overall, you know, because if you know, Matthews had a pretty good game. Kinsey had a pretty good game. Dalen Dawkins did not have a very good game. You know, he had the most carries. He had 11 carries, but he only gained 12 yards. So he was really fighting it for most of the afternoon. And, you know, so was Colin Hill and the rest of the offense. But they were within a score of, you know, winning this game late in the game. So give them credit for that. They played better than I thought they would. It's just a matter of, you know, Colorado State fans are probably going to have to be patient with Hill because there will probably be more games like this one going forward.
Yeah, I hope not. I like what they do about, I guess, having him run around a little bit. That's a little bit of a wrinkle. And the end of the game for their last second play to try to win was very difficult, but playing this close to what they – because Colorado is apparently pretty good after they knocked off Oregon this weekend. So maybe they're a bit better than we all thought, which – seems to be the case. They actually gave Michigan a run, but I think you're right. Playing true freshman quarterback, he's got a Minnesota probably go, 7-5, be okay. But it's these type of games, like losing to Minnesota, losing to Iowa State, losing to what was the other game? Purdue. These are games I say the league should schedule because they should all be winners. And based off this weekend, 2 of the 3 had a very good chance to be winners. And these are the games like. Here's the thing. We'll get to Boise State in a second, or right next game, actually, but people are praising Boise State for being Oregon State team who might win 4 games this year.
Yeah. I mean, to me, I think one of the things to watch with Colin Hill going forward is if you look at some of his numbers, like his completion percentage has gone up during his time in the second half compared to first halves of games. But his explosiveness goes down by a lot. Like, he's thrown about the same amount of passes, but he's thrown them for about half as many yards. So, you know, that's on him as well as the receivers, I think, to really kind of, you know, find one or two plays, you know, 20, 30 yards down the field. But overall, I think, you know, of the games that we talked about so far, I was most encouraged by this one. But, you know, I think there may be some more games ahead of them, but I think that they have enough strengths. Like, they have a defense that can keep them in games, and they have a running game that they can lean on, which is a lot more than some other teams in the conference can say.
Yeah, we'll see. Maybe they're holding back the playbook a little bit, but it seemed like they let him throw it down quite a bit. So we'll see what they do when they play. I don't know how. There's going to be, when they play Boise, that's a tougher team than their matchup this weekend, or when they play Air Force, probably be a little bit tougher. But let's get to the next game. Boise State at Oregon State. Even though Broncos were technically the only winners this weekend that were, I guess, the non-conference winners, I should say. First half, amazing. You're up 21-7, or 31-7, excuse me. Second half, they played pretty crappy, honestly. They played terrible in second half. They won 38-24, but they second half just, not that they should have won like 70-20 or something, but you get outscored 17-7. Their third quarter wasn't very good. You let a bad team back into this game.
Yeah, I mean, I think I'm kind of willing to give them a pass just because if you look at the drive chart for Oregon State in the second half, they only had the one touchdown drive that was, they had exactly one drive after halftime that was more than 29 yards. You know, there was the 80-yard touchdown drive, 13 plays, 82 yards, took about 5 minutes off the clock. That was their first touchdown to kind of get them kind of sort of back into the game, but not really. You know, the field goal that they got was on a real short field coming off of, I believe that was a turnover, right? Or was it just a big return?
I kind of turned away right in the third quarter. But regardless, I get the defense played fine. Like, they played fine, but the offense, like, they didn't bring in the backups. They didn't sub out Rippon. They didn't sub out McNichols. They kept playing them. And then whatever Gary Anderson did defensively, that's where I'm more, not that there's too much concern, I'm just maybe I'm nitpicking, I probably am. But when you're that dominant in the first half, doing end arounds, not that they need all the trick play, Statue of Liberty, they're moving the ball. McNichols had over 200 yards and 4 touchdowns in this game. Rushing and passing. So my main probably kind of concern a little bit is that, yeah, the field goal was after a touchdown, actually. So, okay, never mind.
Oh, yeah, so it might have been an onside kick or something like
that's
that.
That's okay. So but what I'm saying, the offense, like, maybe I should watch more closely, but offense, like, they have, like, punt. Like, they had in the fourth quarter alone, or the second half alone here. Let me see if I count this up really quick. They had 1, 2, it's exciting, I know. 1 3-and-out, 2, 3, 4. Their first 4 possessions in the third quarter were 3-and-outs and punting.
Yeah, I mean, most of that, I imagine, probably falls onto Brett Rippon, who was neither good nor bad Brett Rippon. He was okay Brett Rippon. You know, he was right around 50% completion percentage, you know, 215 yards, 1 touchdown. Most importantly, no turnovers, mm-hmm. which I think is a positive sign. I mean, I'm more willing to give Boise a pass just because the defense played really well throughout. You know, they sacked Oregon State's 2 quarterbacks, like, what, 5 times?
Quite a few.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm trying to count the tackles for loss that they had. It was, you know, I'm just going to estimate that they had like 9 or 10 tackles for loss, which, you know, maybe the offense ran into some troubles in the second half, but the defense played at a high level all game long. And I think that when you think back coming into the season, what were the big questions that we had about this Broncos team is, you know, were they going to be able to replace the talent they were losing on defense? And if they have more performances like the one they had yesterday, they're going to be really hard to beat.
Very true, but here's what I'm looking at these charts again as you're talking. Brett Rippon had like 15 on the last one here. He had only 15 passing yards in those first possessions I mentioned about the 3-and-outs. They neglected the running game. There are 2 times, let's see here, 2 or 3 times. No, 2 times where they threw every down, first, second, and third down and punted. Why aren't they running the ball? You're winning 31-7. I don't understand. It's weird play calling.
We'll get back to that later.
It's just weird. It's just too much. You know what I mean? It's like I'm going through more deeply because I threw out big. I tuned out doing other things. I don't need to watch the entire game, but maybe I should have a little bit more. But why aren't you running the ball? I don't care if it's McNichols or whoever the backup you want to put in there. Why are you throwing the ball every time? You turn into Mike Leach or something? Because this, if this does, is the case, this could come back to bite them.
Yeah, I mean, I think they might have wanted to just go for the jugular. That's about the only thing I can imagine.
Makes sense, but still, it's like, if it's not working after the first two, three possessions, do something else.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not overly concerned. I think they'll be fine going forward.
They probably will. It's just odd. And then they're also the only touchdown, what was it, a pick six by Ricky Lucian? Is that how you say his name? Lucian, a 19-yarder. But it's... I shouldn't be too concerned about Miss Licking. It's just odd that that's what the play calling was to. Unless you're probably right, we want to crush them, and they won convincingly. It wasn't ever in doubt. Just the score is more curious than you'd like it to be. But with the win, they are moved into the top 25. So we have two ranked teams this week, which is nice to see.
That's about the only bright spot on the weekend.
And it is a good, I'm glad for Aztecs can get a rest, Hawaii get a rest, and New Mexico get a rest. All right, next game, Tulsa, Fresno State.
Do we have to?
Before I begin, do we need to add the explicit tag to this podcast?
No.
You were there. So what happened?
Oh man, where do I begin? I mean, it was basically like two different games. It was like the fever dream game where everything goes right for the first 20 minutes, and then it was the game that was more or less the better part of the last season and a half where, you know, the offense wasn't efficient. They couldn't find a running game. The defense failed to really keep up with the tempo that Tulsa set. And it was just a long, slow collapse.
So they're up 31-0. And maybe I jinxed you by saying you're probably smiling at the score, which you probably were at the time because heck.
I was.
as you should be. Jason Virgil's playing well. We're shutting out a very, very, very good Tulsa offense. Dane Evans, the quarterback, overall didn't throw for that many yards. You're stopping Phillip Montgomery's scheme. And then...
Yeah, and Well, you mentioned it a minute ago with Boise State and the curious play calling, right? So that was one of the things that I actually pointed out in my recap was that, you know, they're up 31-7. This is after Tulsa scored their first touchdown to, you know, break the shutout, basically. But this was another instance where they just kept throwing for some reason. And, you know, I had already seen them, you know, go 68 yards in just over a minute, right? Cool. And, you know, so they went back on the field on defense, and Tulsa is like, they run plays faster than I've ever seen a team run plays, basically. Like, there was maybe like 10, 12 seconds of real time because they would literally just line up and just go. And it wasn't like they were really doing anything fancy either. Like, you know, they gave D'Angelo Brewer 46 carries, which is unheard of, right? But it wasn't like they were asking him to do anything more than attack the middle of the defense. They were just running draw after draw after draw. And then Dane Evans would inevitably, you know, fake the handoff and then punish the defense deep. And that was really what those three scoring drives in the second half came down to.
Do you know, wait, really quick. I'm looking at the pace per play this year. They are fifth in the country, 87.3. I know this game went to double overtime. But do you want to gander how many plays they ran yesterday?
Oh, I know it was over 100.
Yeah, 104 plays.
It was enough to apparently, like, it made Jeff Camille vomit, apparently, at the end of regulation.
Jeez.
Like, but I don't blame him because, like, the defense, like, they would literally line up, run the play, get, like, 7 yards, and then be back at the line of scrimmage before the defense could, like, do anything. Like, they were really just forcing them to react on a real physical level as opposed to a mental level. You know what I mean? They didn't allow Fresno State to make any kind of adjustments. And then it was like right before halftime where they still had a 10-point lead, but it felt like...
They came back quickly
and it felt like, oh God, this again. You know what I mean?
So when was that the point when you thought, crap, this is going to be over? Or were you still, all right, it's halftime, they'll get a break, they'll get an IV, they'll get their orange slices, they'll be ready to go in the second half?
No, I'm not the only one who had a bad feeling about it, because people were kind of, it was kind of like a funeral. You know what I mean?
That's what you said when people leaving, that was the case.
Yeah. But I mean, even in the stadium, like it was just this sense of impending doom. And, you know, I'll give the team credit because they did battle back. You know, it wasn't the last time that they held the lead. You know, Chase and Virgil had a really gutsy performance down the stretch where he, you know, tried to reach for the goal line, came up a yard short, and then was able to punch it in on a sneak anyway. But, you know, from the shutout, like they basically got outgained basically 3-1. And the defense, you know, for the individual performances that I saw, like I feel like James Bailey had a really good game that, you know, may not necessarily show up on the chart, but he was in coverage on Keevan Lucas pretty much most of the afternoon. And, you know, the two touchdowns that Lucas ended up catching weren't really his fault. There was just one of those instances where they would, you know, run a lot of crossing patterns down the field and people would lose track of who they were supposed to be covering, and it left Tulsa receivers wide open. And honestly, you know, no matter how it played out, blowing that kind of lead, blowing a 31-point lead, is just unacceptable. You know, you can praise certain individuals, but as a whole, it's just kind of unheard of around here.
That's unheard of anywhere. You know what I mean? Having a over 4 touchdown lead in the first half. First half wasn't even over. There are still 30-plus minutes left in this game.
Yeah.
Tulsa was allowed to score 21 points in the second quarter when it was 31-0. That's 52 points in the first half?
Mm-hmm.
52 points in the first half. So what's next? Because have you come to my side of thinking about DeRuiter's future in this program?
Well, I mean, I said it kind of leaving the game at one point. I said, you know, if he wasn't getting fired before, he's getting super fired whenever it happens. Because, like, there's no, like, they've already said, the athletic director, Jim Parker, has already said he's probably not going to make any kind of personnel change until after the season. But I guarantee you, if he does that, when they come back home in 3 weeks, the stadium's, you know, attendance at the stadium went from like 30,000, which, yeah, right, against Sacramento State.
Tickets sold, attendance.
To about 23,000, which, you know, I would be shocked if the stadium was about half full. You know, they're going to be lucky to get like 15,000 against San Diego State if they do nothing and the team continues to decline. And that's not outside their own possibility, because UNLV has its problems and Nevada has their problems, but, you know,
neither gave up that big of a lead to any team.
Yes, and it's not outside their own possibility that they lose both of those games. And if they lose both of those games, you know, I don't know where the program goes from here, and that just goes beyond DeRuiter.
It is. So let me ask you this. We kind of joked about it. Was there a blimp in presence? Was it flying over the stadium over there in good old Fresno?
No, I just happened to notice like someone pointing a balloon floating out of the stadium. I was like, whatever happened to that thing?
Yeah, because
that was
like
a waste of money.
Yeah, they're like, we're going to go to Las Vegas. We'll be taking the blimp down to San Diego State. San Jose, yeah, around the corner. Or a couple hundred miles, whatever it is, up the I-5 over there.
Maybe they can raise funds and light the blimp on fire.
Hindenburg style? Okay. I don't know what to do. I know his buyout's still high. He's amazing as it is, he still has a winning record overall as a head coach at Fresno State.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically a tale of, you know,
pre-car, post-car?
Pre-car, post-car, yeah. And, you know, the post-car just hasn't been pretty. You know, I like some of his recruits that people have brought in. You know, there's been a lot of conversation about replacing Chase and Virgil as the quarterback. I still don't buy into that necessarily.
Who's going to start? Zach Klein for a year, then bring Virgil back next year again?
Yeah, I mean, that's what people are arguing for, which I don't buy for a second.
It's like at Colorado State. You're with Colin Hill. You're sticking with Colin Hill.
Exactly. It's just, you know, it's going to get ugly. It's going to get worse before it gets better, and it's probably going to get a lot worse before it gets better.
So let me ask you this. Is he going to get fired? I know the AD said it's not going to happen, but what would it take for him to get fired in season?
I think he would probably have to lose both of those games to the Nevada schools.
And those because are the next 2 weeks, right, you said?
Yeah, because if he goes back on the sideline against San Diego State for homecoming, like, they're not
homecoming, jeez, that's great. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, they're not winning that game either. And if the team falls to, like, they're already 1-3. So if they fall to, like, 1-5, 1-6.
1-7 at Utah State, 1-8 Air Force.
Yeah, he's not keeping his job that far, I don't think, if that happens.
So if he's 1-6, he's out of there after San Diego State?
It's kind of like Tony Sanchez said, you know, there's two bad teams next Saturday playing in Vegas.
Oh, I love Coach Sanchez. With that, let's go to Idaho, UNLV. Have we heard from Chris? Is he okay?
I assume he's okay. Maybe somebody should check on him.
He said he's okay last night. He said he ran to the liquor store or something. I'm like, okay. I'm pretty sure to stock up to numb the feeling of this game.
What happened?
I watched a decent amount of this during the because I kind of forgot it was on. I'm like, I'm waiting for the Air Force game. I'm like, all right, I got a couple hours to kill. I'm like, oh, wait, Nevada. Or excuse me, UNLV's playing Idaho. Let's check on the score. Oh, it's 17-14 at halftime. The running game? On par?
I mean, they outgained Idaho 3-1 on the ground. Like, Lexington Thomas, again, he's having a great year so far. He's probably the early front runner for, like, a first-team all-conference spot. Mm-hmm. You know, 160 yards on 19 carries, 2 touchdowns. Even Johnny Stanton got in on the action for once. You know, he was over 100 yards, which I think more than... Yeah, and I think that more than made up for his, you know, another kind of less than efficient passing performance. You know, he was right around 50% again. You know, 1 touchdown, 2 interceptions, which I think is probably part of the problem right there.
Part of it, there's also talk, like, during halftime about benching him for Kurt Palandek.
Interesting.
But that, Sanchez is like, nope, we're going to stay with him. But here, the 2 interceptions led to 10 points, so there's the yardage question you answered for you a little bit when you can score on short fields or no offensive yards. But that's 10 points there, but there's no reason you should be losing. I get it. We joke about Idaho. They're terrible. They're going to FCS status in a couple years. Apparently somebody didn't like my comment saying lost a future FCS school. I'm like, well, that's true, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think UNLV couldn't take advantage of chances. Like, they forced a fumble. Idaho was first and goal to 10 after getting a big 41-yard pass play to Colin Hightower downfield. First and goal to 10. They recover a fumble. Jason Fowle recovered a fumble. Okay, all right, UNLV can do it. They punt 3 plays later. Idaho never scored again, like, on the next possession. 2 later they did, but you have a chance where you have a, like I said before, game-turning play. In the red zone, force a fumble, go down and get some points. Instead, they go 3-and-out on 2 running plays and 1 pass play. On 3rd and 11, they choose to run the ball. I get where they're at in the field at the 3-yard line, but come on, give your team a chance.
No, I mean, I think in that kind of situation, I'm okay with just trying to give yourself space to pump the ball away.
So you mean it's don't, just, you don't know, take a false start like Air Force did have. 4th and goal, 4th and whatever at the half-yard line.
I mean, it's not only that, but, like, I feel like if you look at the box score, the defense actually played a pretty good game, too. You know, they forced a fumble that was recovered by Jason Fayo. You know, the secondary had 8 pass breakups. You know, they had 3 sacks. They didn't give up any to Idaho. And they had, like, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, like, 7 tackles for loss. And, you know, they only gave up 4 to Idaho. It was just kind of one of these weird games that got away from them, or what?
Well, looking through what I watched, a lot of short field goals. They had 2 field goals within 30 yards. So when you're that close, you can't punch it in, especially with Thomas playing as well as he did. Or, excuse me, one was a 32-yarder, and then one of the other ones was a 22-yarder? Something extremely short, 24-yarder. So right there, you can't punch it in with how well you're running the ball. There's a couple of things right there where you can see. They drive all the way down, but then Stanton isn't playing very well and then passing the ball, and they can't get it into the end zone. And so there's a couple of areas there where they had left, not that they leave points on the board, but long drive and take a chip shot. At least, hey, give them credit. At least they made these short field goals.
That's true. I mean, that's nice to know that they have that kind of little special teams advantage where they can, you know, at least punctuate successful drives with something.
Oh,
you
and the overtime field goal was a 23-yarder as well.
And I mean, the other thing is too, you know, Devontae Boyd was absent from the box score last week, and he rebounded pretty nicely. He had 6 catches, 64 yards. You know, Darren Woods actually led the team in receiving. He had 66 yards on 4 catches. So, I mean, again, maybe this was just one of those weird games where, you know, you can outplay a team and still lose, basically.
I'll just go with the 10 points off turnovers. That's the difference, I think.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to point to that, yeah.
Because Nevada, or, geez, sorry, I keep saying Nevada and UNLV. If I'm correct, UNLV had no points off turnovers, I want to say. Because that fumble they punted, and that was the only turnover for Idaho, correct?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, and so that's kind of it right there. It's just a couple small things, short field goals, and then you give up those pick six, and then the you don't score off your own turnover advantage you had. It's hard to go 97 yards, but Idaho scored off those pair of turnovers. So let's move on to the next game, the last game of the night, which don't talk to a few Utah State guys because they did not appreciate the officiating. And the Air Force's 27-20 victory over Utah State.
Yeah, I mean, I think this was, we build this as kind of the game of the weekend, and I think all things considered, it was. You know, because Utah State's defense, again, I think they showed up pretty well against, you know, because you know when you go into a game what Air Force wants to do, they want to run the ball. And they held the Falcons to just over 4 yards a run, which I think is kind of a win for them. And, you know, Nate Romine didn't exactly have the best game throwing the football either. He was only 5-13, you know, 113 yards, only one score. You know,
that
again,
defense
though,
for Aggies is good because he is targeting Robinette all night and they couldn't connect on him.
Yeah, and at the same time, you know, the Aggies run game,
nothing.
They disappeared. Like, and you know, and it was tough that they lost Devontae Mays. I think that probably hurts them more than it hurts a lot of other teams in the conference to lose their top running back. But, you know, they played without him before, and, you know, the guys behind him, Justin Hervey, Tawny Lindsey, again, they needed them to step up, and this was just another instance where they didn't.
Yeah.
Lindsey in particular, I think, you know, he saw the majority of the action in Mays' stead. 17 carries, 18 yards.
Yeah, and then with Mace, he didn't bring him in until the second period, and he went down writhing pain, circling over, like rolling over, had a cast or some sort of boot on his ankle. And I have a message from somebody at the game because some agent guy I know is kind of DMing me a couple of things. What did he say? He said something where they thought it was a broken leg or lower leg injury. It looks like it's a knee injury. So a knee injury on Mace, and so I don't know any more update. That was this morning where I got that update here, but I don't know. Knee injury, him walk off rolling, how he did. I don't know. It's hard to tell because if you have like an ACL tear, sometimes you don't really feel it sometimes. It's like you can still walk and move, but you know something's wrong. But him rolling, did you see the play when he got hurt?
I did not. No.
He went down, first carry of the game, got like 2 yards. He wasn't just down. He was like rolling in circles on the field, like rocking and rolling over.
That's tough.
And so it's... So it looks like it's a possibly – whatever it is, it's a right injury. Barely needed help getting off the field. Looks like a potential knee injury. So I don't know, tore something there or fractured something in that kneecap area. But regardless, rushing game was terrible. But what I liked for Utah State, like people were saying last week, like we were talking about, I think it was a Benner Parker, Utah State guys, saying about it's hard to tell if you don't watch all the game about drops. But this game, like 29-47, it's okay. It's not amazing. It's pretty good. But there weren't many drops. He was on target for most of this game. Like, when they needed passes, he was getting it done compared to what he's been doing the past couple weeks. But that Air Force defense, man, they're just stopping that running game all night long. And at one point, Myers just couldn't get it done in the air.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing I think Utah State fans, you know, despite the loss, I think what they could be encouraged by is the fact that their linebacker core, to me, I think they played really well. You know, Alex Huerta, 13 tackles, one quarterback hit. You know, Anthony Williams, 11 tackles. He had a sack, had a couple of, you know, hit the quarterback a couple times as well. You know, Brock Carman, 7 tackles. So, you know, they've got guys in the middle of that defense who are active, and I think that's going to help them stay in a lot of games throughout this year. And the other thing is, too, is that, you know, I talked a lot about where the big plays. You know, they found big plays in this game. You know, Myers had, you know, 8 different plays through the air of more than 15 yards. And I think that might have kind of doubled their season total to date, which is not an easy feat against this Air Force defense. And I think the other takeaway from this game is Weston Steelhammer did get called for targeting, I understand.
Correct. It was it wasn't a passing play. Kent Myers is running out of bounds, and Myers lobbed the helmet, Myers actually was on the sideline for a little bit. They're going to bring in Damien Hobbs. Did not, but Myers didn't look great on the next drive. But yeah, it was a targeting on the sideline, up in the head. So he's out for this game. But he's also, more importantly, possibly out. Well, conference game, play Navy, both big deals for them. But he's out for the first half of that Navy game. I know Deruder, stupid coaches, used to coach there at Air Force, Troy Calhoun, is going to appeal. But I don't know how he can appeal, because from my understanding, from a game I was looking at last week when BYU played UCLA, there was 2 targeting calls in that game, and that what the explanation was that there could not be a review because there was video replay, which every game essentially has some sort of replay, almost every game. Now, if you're not on TV, something's really weird, but if there's video replay available during the game, the play stands, or the call stands, penalty and the suspension. So I'm not sure what the appeal process is, because that's what was explained to me and some other people a while back about the Utah BYU game when they lost 2 guys to targeting. But it looks like he's out, and that's a big deal. But there's also, like, there were, like, I watched a lot. There were a bunch of questionable officiating calls in this game.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily, some of both. If you look at the picture that Ben used for a preview, a non-PI call where the Air Force guy is basically hugging the Aggie receiver before the ball gets there in the end zone. Uh-huh. No call. And then there's a few fumble. There's a calls where even the guys, like it was Mike Bellotti and Alan Stilbeck, I want to say, in the booth. There's a lot of questionable calls. Like, what do you mean? This should be a turnover. This should be a reverse to call. Most of the calls, like, there are some questionable fumble calls that, if you read the article, it's like the play stood, which means I can't tell what happened. So we have to go with the call on the field. There are multiples of those, like a couple fumbles and a few other plays, but there's a lot of questionable calls against, not to blame the officials, but they had a more impact in the game than you'd like them to have. Officials and the replay booth. And so, if you read an article, it's more of a rant, as he mentions right at the top, warning, this is not a recap, but a rant of the events that happened in the game.
I've been there.
Yeah, you've been there, but there was there was a game where that played an impact in this game. So no PI call or the fumble turnovers that didn't happen. And so one of the things was Air Force had a field goal, one of those turnovers where Kent Myers apparently fumbled. But to me, it looked pretty close. I thought he was down. But when the replay booth looked at it, they didn't have enough angles and said, we have to go with the call on the field. And so, unfortunately, that still happens. And that's a big deal. And Utah State, they need to hope. I don't know. They played well. They didn't play bad. The running game needs to be better, obviously. They had a lot of injuries as well. It wasn't just Mays. There was a tight end that went down for a player or two, a receiver. I don't recall who. Quite a few. Dallin Levitt, defensive back, left for a little bit. So a lot of injuries in this game. I don't know what status of Mays is. Like we said, he's probably out for a good while, it seems like. But, they had some miscues. But still, if you can't run the ball when you need to and Kent Myers runs out of steam, you can't really, you know what I mean? You can't really blame the officials here or there. A couple key plays, but this game was still in reach, even with those things that went on.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I think there's at least a few things that Utah State fans can take away from this game and feel pretty good about. I think, like Colorado State, their defense is going to keep them in pretty much every single game they play in conference action. And that, I think, in itself, you know, between that and a pretty good quarterback, that can go a long way. But again, they're going to have to work on their running game with or without Mays. They just need that to be more consistent.
They certainly do. Like the running game, DJ Johnson had only 59 yards for Air Force. So they limited the big plays. They had 3 plays over 15 yards, at least, running the ball. A couple deep pass plays weren't great. Another touchdowns, but they set up points. But Air Force, not to say they get that, but they usually get those type of plays every now and then. But Aggies just got to move on, and they're sitting at 2-2, and they're not like we kind of joked this was an elimination game, but they're going to need some help if they want to get to the Mountain West title game.
I think they'll be a tough out for pretty much any team in the Mountain Division, though.
They have to. They play Boise next week on the road. That's going to be very difficult. And so if they lose that game, they're probably done. Not, well, I mean, for a division title, in a sense. They can probably still win eight games, in my opinion. After that, they got still San Diego State's a tough one at Wyoming, at BYU. But if they could somehow get past Boise State on the road, they're back in it. Because then if Air Force beats Boise, or Boise beats Air Force, then it's all three-way tie and whatever they do for that. But it's just a tough loss. There are positive, like you said, defense played pretty well. Just running game, man. Running game, man. Don't let the refs take the game out of the hands for you, I guess. I don't know what to say. Just a tough one.
Yeah.
But Air Force, kudos to them. They also need to get the running game going as well. But their run defense, geez, this has been its best it's been in forever.
That is also true.
That, they kept like, I'm like, crap. I figure early on, I'm like, man, there's no way. I'm like, Air Force is just going to crush them. Even though they're down 7-0, but they made, or 7-3, they made that comeback. But like, with them not running the ball well, I'm like, oh, geez, what's going to happen? But then with, that linebacker core, Utah State, like specify, not running well. I'm like, is Kent Myers going to do this? Because he had issues last week, but he stepped up and moved the ball when they needed to. But Air Force there, they still have their questions too. But that, stopping that running game, when they play they don't play San Diego State, do they? I don't think. I think they skip them as well.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, when they play like Boise State or Wyoming or who else runs the ball well? Army's playing pretty good this time of year. You know what I mean? Boise State late in the year, so we'll see. But Air Force undefeated, not ranked, getting votes. Boise ranked, San Diego State ranked off the bye week. Any last minute thoughts we need to add as we're wrapping this bad boy up? So right now, just so people are aware, it's Sunday afternoon. Tim Drutter is still the head coach at Fresno State.
For now.
We need to clear that because things could change. If it hasn't happened at this point, it's not going to happen this week, right?
Sadly, no.
Sadly. Oh, man. It looks like we'll have some fun other stuff once we get to coach talk later on this year. But
oh,
I think that's what we got for today. So we will end the show here. Hopefully, hope people had fun because we were kind of – hey, we were a bit – we weren't too mean, were we tonight? Not really?
We weren't.
Too mean? We were okay?
Nah, I think we were – I think we were harsh but fair.
Okay. I think that's where I want to go to. I know people said we're not positive enough, but I can't find the positivity in too many games. Even that Boise State game I kind of crapped on. I'm like, come on, blow them out. Crush them. Beat Oregon State by 45 points. But that's our show for tonight. Again, we're at iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, where else we at? Blog Talk Radio, yes. Thanks for listening, and I'm not going to ask for a review. Maybe that's our key to get one, but check out our site, mwcconnection.com. We'll have our power polls up this week. Really quick, who's your number one this week?
I think it's probably still San Diego State.
So it's Aztecs, Broncos, Falcons?
Yeah, more or less.
Who's your bottom team? Is it still Hawaii?
No, it's probably Fresno State at this point.
Interesting. All right, we'll see how that goes. But thanks for checking out our show tonight. And I think we need to mention, especially for this show, we are biased against your team.